Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books, an independent New Orleans bookstore. Additional support comes from the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, WWNO's weekly look at the New Orleans literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week I'll be talking with Arthur Hardy, who's celebrating 40 years of publishing Arthur Hardy's Mardi Gras Guide. We'll also talk with Yvonne Perrette, who's written a new Mardi Gras book for kids, The Little Float That Could. Arthur Hardy is the go-to guy for Mardi Gras info, and this year, more than ever. He comes by his love of carnival the way most of us do. He's a fifth-generation New Orleanian who knows his stuff. He's been a band leader, too, marched in his share of carnival parades, and now for 40 years, he's been the publisher of Arthur Hardy's Mardi Gras Guide, the premier guide to the season. And not only that, his Mardi Gras and Illustrated History is in its fifth edition, and he's a fine local publisher as well, with many books to his credit. And I can say from personal experience, he's one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. Arthur Hardy, welcome back.
I might as well die and go to heaven. That introduction.
All true, baby. All true.
Thank you.
Now, this edition of the Mardi Gras Guide is so special. This look back at 40 years.
Yeah, we did something unusual this year. I interviewed myself.
I saw that. I
thought it would be kind of fun. And I was reminded of the words of our dear departed friend Don Lee Keith, who always said, be careful when you write things that it doesn't come off as pin a rose on me. And I was afraid that it might sound like I was bragging, but if you read it, there's a lot of crazy things in there that I've done through the years that I'm not too proud of. So it's almost a true confession of how not to publish a magazine over 40 years. I mean, we've had some blunders, and I revealed most of them in my self-interview.
That was very generous of you.
Well, you know, the truth is the truth.
And I love seeing that picture of Don Lee Keith, who's such a good writer.
Yeah, we've had some wonderful people work with us through the years. Sadly, like Cindy Bird, who died last year, no longer with us. But it's been a terrific ride, you know.
So take us back to the very early days of the Mardi Gras Guide. How hard was it to put that first one together?
It was extremely difficult because we had no publishing experience, no business experience, and didn't have contacts with most of the organizations that we were trying to promote. So it was tough, and I think we were more stubborn than smart because it was a financial disaster the first couple of years, and we stuck with it, and eventually it turned around, but it was not easy. I wouldn't recommend it for anybody who's sane.
And it was a family affair almost from the very beginning.
Yeah, and still is. We expanded and then decided to get lean and mean, and now it's really my wife and I. My son does some editing, daughter helps a little bit, and our fabulous art director, David Johnson, who has his own studio in Metairie, in his home, just like our office is in our home. We're really a small outfit that tries to act like we're big stuff.
Well, the numbers don't lie. When you talk about the number of pages you printed, the number of copies, and I was interested to see that 2001 was the biggest year.
Yeah, that was
printing.
An anniversary year, and print was a lot more popular then than it is now.
Yeah.
We're not printing as many as we used to. But yeah, that year I think we did 135,000, something like that. Yeah. But as the industry changes, you change with it. We just this week unveiled our first Mardi Gras Guide app, iTunes and Google Play, and I have no idea how that's going to work. I was brought to that almost kicking and screaming because I'm a print guy, you know. But you've got to do that. You've got to go where the business is. And we're selling this. We're not giving it away. And we'll see how it works. But I felt the need to play in that arena.
Well, you have a brand, you know.
Yeah.
You're the man.
I hope so. That's what we're trying to convince people anyway.
Now, one of the things I loved about this edition of the guide is that you pay tribute to some longtime carnival experts. People like Nell Nolan, for example.
Yeah. We have a nice feature on Nell. And you know, Susan, that's been one of the joys of the magazine through the years. I mean, you know, you always want to make money. You hope to leave some sort of legacy. But the amount of people we've been able to feature some important ones who strangely haven't been featured. You know,
right.
They do things, but nobody's kind of put it in context. And then to give some smaller players, if you will, kind of their 15 minutes of fame, you know, and I don't think we've launched any careers, but we've certainly acknowledged some people for their contributions. And Mardi Gras is so big and so diverse. I mean, you'll never run out of people to thank.
Right. Well, Nell Nolan is so interesting because as a society columnist, her job is the whole, you know, arena. I wouldn't have her job for anything.
No, it's got to be tough dealing with.
You know, and then you have a nice, nice tribute to John McGill as well from the Historic New Orleans Collection.
Yeah, and we're going to miss him. He's not dead, but he's not there anymore. He's not working there. And what a great guy. Very resourceful. And they're going to miss, we're all going to miss him.
And then some of the early, early chroniclers of Carnival.
A guy named T.C. DeLeon, who was a brilliant writer, but also kind of the Blaine Kern of his days. He was an entrepreneur and saw the value of Mardi Gras and staging it in various cities around the United States. He was from Mobile. And, I mean, those of us that study Mardi Gras know him, but most other people don't. And I just thought it was nice to acknowledge his contributions.
Now, let's talk about some of the big events that are coming up this particular year, Endymion's 50th anniversary.
Yeah, that's the little crew that could. I was actually at its first parade in 1967. It was before I was in the business, of course. I was in college, and I went to a lot of parades. And I got to tell you, it was nothing. I mean, it was just a little crappy neighborhood parade with rented floats. And no one could have dreamed what it would become. And it all comes down to the captain and founder, Ed Muniz, you know, who's just an incredible person, longest-serving captain in the history of Mardi Gras. Can't wait to see the parade. It's going to highlight themes from earlier years. And Henri Schindler designs that parade now, so it's going to have a really neat look to it. It ought to be spectacular.
And also, you have a wonderful article in this issue on the Crew de Vue.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people think I don't like Crew de Vue, and I really do. I never miss a parade. I don't feature them in our parade section, not just because it's bawdy, and it is, and it's not for kids, but technically it is not a Mardi Gras parade. To be a Mardi Gras parade, by ordinance, you must parade within the 12 days of Fat Tuesday, which they don't. And that's why they can get away with some of the stuff they do, which is a whole lot of fun, but would be completely illegal were it a Mardi Gras parade. It's also why they get to do their thing in the quarter. But we take a look back at their genesis, which really was a crew of clones.
Yes.
They were birthed by that group, and it's kind of a fun story, I think.
It is, and Keith Marshall wrote that story,
and
was fun.
And what a guy he is. Mark, we need to write a story on Keith.
Now, one of the things I love in this edition is that you chronicle so many of the changes, and you talk about the importance of women in Carnival, particularly, you know, Nicks and Muses, and the rise of so many women's marching groups.
It's been amazing. I mean, that's been probably the biggest story in the last 40 years, or one of them, including, I mean, you have to put the police strike in there and the Dorothy May Taylor, and of course, Katrina, my goodness. But those were events, not trends. But in the last 10 years, I mean, there are 9 all-female parades now in a 3-parish area, 7,000 members. I mean, it's phenomenal.
It is.
And remember that not that long ago, most people in Carnival said, you'll never have a successful nighttime weekday parade for women. Come on. Saturday, they can go in the afternoon. But come on, at night, it ain't going to happen. Can't do it. Ha ha. And Muses came along and said, get out the way. And thankfully, people did. And now Nick's is even bigger. And we've got some new female African-American groups. Nick's has spun off into Pandora, which is going to parade Lundi Gras in Metairie. It's terrific. You know, and again, it speaks to the tremendous diversity of Mardi Gras. I mean, there's a place for everybody.
Well, and one of the things I love is that you draw attention to the fact that it's still not commercial.
No, it's not. And I hope it stays that way. And, you know, a late announcement that will be on our app but not in our magazine is Anthony Mackie is the first African-American Bacchus.
Boy, that's great.
A former Warren Easton student, might I add.
Yes.
You know, we're very proud of that. And he's good friends with our angel, Sandra Bullock. They just did a movie together. And I think it's time, and he's going to be a great king because he's from here and he gets it.
He knows totally
how important
gets
it is.
That was an exciting
oh, it's very
turn,
cool.
I think. Now, one of the things that I wanted to ask you about is that, you know, you are a public face of Carnival. You do commentary for TV, newspapers, radio, everywhere. But I wonder, is there some private Mardi Gras thing that means a lot to you? You know, you think of Peggy and Errol LaBorde going home to their champagne and moon pies. What is the private thing about Carnival that means a lot to you?
Well, I don't know how private this is, but I'm going to ride in my very first Mardi Gras parade this year. I have never ridden in a parade.
Fantastic.
Because I'm always covering parades. And in fact, I've had some media contracts that said you can't because we don't want you to show partiality. So, you know, if you were riding in this parade, you maybe wouldn't cover the others. But anyhow, for the first time since 1986, I'm not working on Fat Tuesday. I work for Fox 8 News now, and they graciously let me off to ride in the Rex Parade. I've been asked to ride. So then I'll be ready to die and go to heaven, I guess.
That's about
for
time.
Your first parade. Ain't bad, huh?
Not bad at all. Do you want to tell us which float?
I honestly don't know yet.
Okay.
I'll find out, but I'm really looking forward to that. And I've never kept it a secret that I haven't ridden, but when I tell people like this, well, how can you call yourself an expert? And I say, well, you know, Coroner Frank Mignard's never been dead, but he's done 1,000 autopsies, so come on, give me a break.
It's the most fun thing I've ever done in my
That's
life,
what they
Arthur.
Tell me, yeah. I'm afraid I haven't bought enough throws yet, so I'm out there trying to figure it out.
Yeah. Okay, all right, now we'll watch for you. Don't tell people where you are. You could cause a small riot.
No, I doubt it. No, it's going to be fun. Just look for the guy having the most fun. That'll be me.
Now, one of the things that fascinates me is that over the years, you've continued, as you say, to study Carnival.
Yeah.
And you're always acquiring things, you know, old programs, invitations. And you've started giving some of that collection to Loyola.
Yeah, I did. I gave my collection of about 3,000 ball programs from the World War II on to Loyola. Gave some things to the Homicide Research Center, some African-American things. Gave the State Library, some of my gay Carnival collection. So starting to piece some of it out, I've actually sold some things too. You know, you get to the point where you realize you don't own any of this stuff. You're just kind of a
steward,
custodian until the next generation. So it needs to go to places that will conserve it and most importantly, share it.
Yes.
Collectors sometimes just say, I got it and you don't, and they put it in a drawer. That's no fun.
Right. And, you know, you have so much invested in the spread of knowledge for Carnival.
Yeah, and that's really important because I've always, and I guess it's the teacher in me, I've always believed that the more you know, the more you can enjoy.
Yeah.
And if you just want to know what they're throwing, we'll try to tell you that. But if you want to know the mythology of Bacchus, we'll tell you that too. So you kind of ladle it out in layers and people can pick how deeply they want to get into the subject.
And sometimes what goes around comes around, like the Advocate doing these Carnival bulletins
so
again.
So glad of that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a new tradition, and it's even going to expand this year more. Now, every parade wants to be in the Advocate. It's kind of cool.
It is kind of cool. So, you've done good work, man.
Well, I can't take credit for that. I fully endorsed it and tried to help them with it, but that was somebody smarter than me's idea at the Advocate.
Oh,
and they're doing
sweet.
Quite well with it. I'm proud of them, and I'm happy to write for them. It gives me a chance. I've never had a daily venue for information, and so that's kind of cool.
Do you ever get tired of this?
I thought I would at some point, but I haven't yet, you know, and I used the line in my magazine last year. My wife says, I can retire 2 weeks after my autopsy, you know, so I'm going to keep going on. And really, how can you get tired of this?
I know. You know, it's the most fun thing in the world.
It's just so great to be a part of it, you know.
I know. We're so lucky to live here. One of the things that always strikes me about Carnival, though, is that it's so beautiful and it's so ephemeral. But it's so much work on the part of individuals.
Yeah.
You know, you think of people glittering shoes or glittering purses and design. You know, it brings out the artist in everyone, don't you think?
It really does. A tremendous amount of work, and then it's gone.
Yeah.
You know, but then we start counting down for next year. Speaking of which, I have repeated a mistake in the last 10 issues of the Mardi Gras Guide. I had the date wrong.
Uh-oh.
For 2017. Somebody called me up and said, you fool, that's a Sunday. I said, oh, my God. So Mardi Gras is February 28th, not 26th, as it said in the last 10 Mardi Gras Guides. I got it straight
this
year.
It's right in this one,
yeah.
I know.
I'll tell you what, I must have copied from somebody who didn't count well.
Oh, Arthur, I think we can forgive you.
Well, I don't know.
We've got a year to adjust.
We'll see.
Oh, man. Well, watch for Arthur Hardy's Carnival coverage on Fox News this season, and you can find Arthur Hardy's Mardi Gras Guide all over town. Arthur, thank you so much, and have a great ride.
Happy Mardi Gras.
Yvonne Spear Perrette is a native New Orleanian who loves her hometown. She taught math and English in New Orleans schools for 25 years, and with retirement has turned to writing. First came the charming Yatwit, Chicken Gumbo for the New Orleans Soul, and she's followed that up with a new picture book, The Little Float That Could, which is sure to be a hit this Mardi Gras season. Yvonne, welcome back to The Reading Life.
I am delighted to be back. Thank you, and happy Mardi Gras.
Oh, you too. So you're liking the writing life now.
I am liking the writing life. It seems to follow one after another. I'm always busy with some project, and things are coming through, so I'm just really happy with it.
Oh, that's great. So after your last book, Yatwit, which was so funny, what made you decide to turn to this younger group of readers? Because you were a high school teacher, mostly.
I was. I taught high school math and English for all of those years. But what happened was I had grandchildren. And grandchildren just changed the entire perspective of your life. And I was reading to them one night, and I thought about some of the books that I had read to my kids and that had been read to me when I was young, and some of the books that aren't there anymore. And one of my favorites when I was little was The Little Engine That Could. And I just didn't see that in my little stack of books that I read to them every night. So I started thinking about it and just decided to redo that story, but make it The Little Float That Could and put a real New Orleans twist to it.
Ah, that's nice. Now, this is a fairly common technique in children's books. I mean, there's been The Cajun Gingerbread Boy, there's been Le Petit Rouge, and Cajun Night Before Christmas, of course, the granddaddy of them all. But the idea of The Little Float That Could is really perfect for Mardi Gras, isn't it?
It works out because kids see the production of Mardi Gras when they're on top of the ladders and the floats are going down the street. And I don't know if they always think about what goes into all the planning and the production of Mardi Gras before it gets to that point. So one of the things that I do in the beginning is take them to the float den across the river and show how all the floats are there and how they're decorated, how they line up, the people get on the floats, etc. So all of that becomes part of the book. And I think that the kids may see a little different side of Mardi Gras next time one of those floats rides by.
That's one of the things about Mardi Gras that's always fascinated me. It's something we make. You know, we put a lot of work and time into it.
It is.
For everybody's pleasure.
I mean, it is. It's one of those amazing things. And this year, one of our first king cakes that we had with the grandkids, my granddaughter said, I hope I get the baby. She knew the idea. And I said, do you know, Camille, that in other places they don't have king cakes and they don't even have Mardi Gras? And she just got quiet and looked at me like I was crazy. So I think one thing that we need to do is make sure that our young ones realize that this is our production by our city, and it's got such a long cultural tradition. There's so much that goes into it that involves every economic level of the city. It involves artists and planners and designers and those who make the costumes and those who ride the floats, that there's just so much to it.
Oh, yeah. You have lots more books you can do about this. I can see this. So it's a good lesson for all of us, though.
It is.
It's good to be reminded.
That's
and
right.
You used your grandkids as a test audience for this book.
I did. Right before the book had gone to press, when I had the pictures that went with it, the first night that they spent at the house over at Tia's house, they call me Tia, I sat down and read the book to them, and I was tearing up trying to get through the first reading, and here are my grandchildren, they're just rapt attention listening to something that I had written and drawn, and it really did touch my heart, and I said, well, maybe the book will actually work.
Well, that's a memory to cherish.
It is.
And the
it
book
is.
Actually does work. But one thing that impressed me so much is that you not only wrote this book, but you illustrated it, and you've never done that before.
I have never done that before. I married into a family of artists, and my children draw well, but I was always the artistically challenged member of the family. I couldn't draw a stick figure. I taught math, and I had hard times making circles, triangles on the board, but I had a certain concept for the type of character that this book would be. It had to be bright, and it had to be cheerful, and it had to be something that would appeal to children of a young age. And I actually contacted a couple of illustrators and told them what I wanted. They said, we'll get back to you, and they never did. And so finally, out of frustration, one day I sat down and I just started drawing, and actually it started coming together. And I tell people that I learned to draw by erasure. I would draw a hand and maybe only one finger would come out, so I would would erase everything else, draw the hand again, maybe two more fingers would work. Anyway, so I finally got a full hand, and then it just started coming to me. And the little characters just seemed to have a life and a personality mm-hmm. of their own, which is really what I wanted from the start.
So, well, the whole book is so bright and cheerful.
Well, thank you. I'm surprised that it came out. I have to say that. I'm glad that it did.
And you chose a New Orleans publisher for this book as well.
I did. River Road Press had just started out last year, and the publisher, Scott Campbell, was the one who approached me about publishing this book after I had talked about it to a few people. And he just seemed really committed to the idea, and he seemed committed to the artwork also. When I first showed him the artwork, I thought he would just roll his eyes, but he was like, hey, I like that. So anyway, the project just started going, and it went. And I'm happy with it.
So, do you want to give us a little sneak peek of what's next for you?
Oh, what's next is actually coming up fairly soon. I have been working with the artist Simone Hardeveld, who is the one who does all the signs on Magazine Street, Hoot At, Be Nice or Leave, all the open and closed signs. He's the one who designed and executed the newsroom set for News with a Twist. And so I approached him. Scott also had this idea put in the back of my head. So I've approached him, and I have some of his life story and some of his earliest paintings and how his work has evolved. He's become internationally famous. Even though he's a native of France, he is a delightful New Orleans character, quirky, and he just fits in so well with this city. And I've really been enjoying working with him. And Paul Perret III has taken all the photographs that are going to go with the book, and we hope to go to press by the end of this month.
Ah, so it'll be out in time for French Quarter
Fest. In time for French Quarter Fest. And Simone always has a large area in the middle of Jackson Square where he sells his art, and also he designs for free the poster every year for French Quarter Festival. And so people can go there, and he uses that to help raise funds for the French Quarter Festival. So this year, also, the book should be there. So that'll be a really nice, nice launch.
Have him make you a sign that says, be nice and read.
I love that.
Oh, we've been talking with Yvonne Spear-Perret, whose new book is The Little Float That Could. It's full of Mardi Gras spirit. You can meet her Wednesday, February 3rd, during Christ Episcopal School Night at Barnes & Noble in Mandeville. Yvonne, thank you so much.
It was so much fun. Thanks, Susan.
I can hear music somewhere out there. And I can hear a happy voice saying, out of and I wanna get out the door, just I do in the open wide. A big time serenade, it must be a street parade. And I want a second line, gonna have a good time.
There are so many songs about books, songs inspired by specific authors and their works, songs that use books as a metaphor for life experience, and songs that show us how many ways books and reading are a part of life. Nick Lowe sees his life as a story in When I Write the Book.
Well, I can remember like it was only yesterday. Love was young and foolish, like a little child at play. But oh, how lovers change. I never dreamed out easily. For now I'm just a shadow of the boy I used to be. Oh yeah, yeah. And when I write the book about my love, it will be about a man who was torn in half, about his hope and ambition wasted through the years. The pain will be written on every page and tears. Oh, when I write.
When I write the book.
Oh, when I write the book about my love.
When I write the book about my love.
I was a fool to myself when I kept on running around. And I fared a little better when I tried settling down. Maybe some magic moment, heaven known but not for long. For all too soon the magic was in a moment gone. Oh.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. If your New Year's resolution is to jumpstart your writing, consider signing up for James Nolan's Creative Writing Workshop in Fiction and Nonfiction, which meets Tuesdays from 6:30 to 9 at Tubby & Coo's Mid-City Bookshop, running February 16th through May 17th. For tuition and registration info, write James Nolan at jnolan77@bellsouth.net. And the Monday Night Writers Group meets every Monday night at 7 at Barnes & Noble Metairie. And remember, the Friends of the New Orleans Public Library book sale has moved to the Algiers Regional Branch on Holiday Drive. Hours are now Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday from 10 to 2. And coming up, Sunil Yapa discusses and signs The Heart is a Muscle the Size of a Fist, Friday, February 12th at 6 at Octavia Books. In observance of Black History Month at the New Orleans Public Library, Big Frida discusses the memoir Big Frida, God Save the Queen Diva, February 13th at 2 at the Main Library. Roberta Kaplan discusses and signs Then Comes Marriage, United States v. Windsor and the Defense of DOMA, Saturday, February 13th at 2 at Temple Sinai. Melanie Benjamin discusses and signs The Swans of Fifth Avenue, Tuesday, February 16th at 6 at Octavia Books. The members of the East Bank Regional Library Great Books Discussion Group discuss The Confessions of Nat Turner by William Styron, Tuesday, February 16th at 7 at the East Bank Regional Library. And a big shout out to novelist and memoirist Jessamyn Ward. The Tulane University Creative Writing Professor is the recipient of a Strauss Living for Literary Excellence from the American Academy of Arts and Letters. This award, given every 2 years, provides $200,000 for Ward to devote 2 years to her writing, then return to Tulane in 2018. And remember, mark your calendars for the upcoming Tennessee Williams New Orleans Literary Festival. It's the Fest's 30th anniversary this year, and it all takes place March 30th through April 3rd. Check out TennesseeWilliams.net for the stellar lineup. Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community, Our Lady of Holy Cross College, and the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press. The theme song and end music for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by Jenny Lawson and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. Or you can email us anytime at thereadinglife@wwno.org. I'm Susan Larson. Thanks for listening and keep reading.